One other thing about this summer, and that is we really do hope that you will download the North Point app onto your phone. Some of you, I know you are scared to death that it is connected to Russia, and that your personal sins will be leaked online. But we can assure you that there is absolute security on our church app, and that you can feel absolutely confident downloading it onto your phone. And we would like you to do that because there's actually information that is important that gets disseminated onto our app. And one of the things that we're doing this summer is that there is kind of in connection to the summer teaching series, there's also and you can see it on the I think it's on the this week part of it, is that there is a weekly prayer that goes along with the sermon. There is a memory verse that goes along with our message, and also a takeaway, a point of action, something that you can do related to what we've studied today. And it's right on there every week, and you can see it and follow it, and maybe that will be helpful for you. So don't be afraid to do it. It's 2017, for crying out loud. Let's read together. One of the most famous and well-known passages of Scripture in the Bible. It's out of Paul's letter to the Romans. It's in chapter 12. And it's the first two verses. Let's read these out loud together. Let them sink in for today. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. There are books that I own. That I have had for years and years and years. I'm a reader. I know that lots of people are not readers, and it doesn't give you any better standing before God if you are a reader or not. Certainly not. But reading has been such an important part of my life. And there are books that I have that I can tell you I have read and reread a dozen times in my life. When I get into a season of my life, I know that there is a particular book that I will turn to for help and for encouragement. If you were to kind of peruse my office area, you would notice in my office there are little quotations that are stuck up on the wall or up on my bookcase or in my house. There are quotes that float around that I have had for years and years and years of my life. And I turn to them. They are constant reminders of truth that I want to build my life on. There's lessons that I have been taught that when I'm going through something in my life, it's interesting because I will turn right back to that lesson again and say, God, I am really sorry. I think I have forgotten what it is that I learned some years ago. I hear that. And today is it's a story out of the Bible that I learned years ago. And it's one of those stories that absolutely stuck with me. And it changed everything. Everything. I told you enough of my own story through the years that you know I'm just a church kid. I was raised going to church. I learned all the stories. I did this. I mean, it didn't look exactly like this, but it looked similar enough that church was a part of my who I am. It shaped me. This is one of those stories that changed everything in a really dramatic way. And it might have been that I wasn't paying careful attention when I was young, or it might have been that it just took somebody to teach it on a deeper level and for me to pay attention and to ultimately get it. It's a story out of the Old Testament, and the story is much bigger and greater than I'm going to relay today. If you want to read all about it, you can go to 1 Samuel 15 and actually start reading some chapters before that, because it lays the foundation. But in chapter 15, there's an interaction that happens between King Saul, who was the appointed king of the Israelites, didn't have the greatest reputation and was ultimately dethroned by God. But he has an interaction with Samuel. Samuel was a prophet. Samuel was even a judge. Samuel served a whole lot of different purposes, but Samuel was a messenger from God, in particular to King Saul in this part of the story. And you know, Old Testament stories are fascinating. Some of them have the most outrageous plot lines. Some of them, you can read them and go, really? That's really how this played out? And then at the end of it, at least every time that I am following a story out of the Old Testament, I realize that somehow in God's divine wisdom, that story is in the Bible to teach me a lesson in 2017. I don't know how that works. I know history has a way of changing us. In this story that kind of culminates in chapter 15 of 1 Samuel, God spoke to King Saul through Samuel. He sent him his message. And the message in chapter 15 was, Saul, you need to take the Israelite army and you need to go punish your enemy, the Amalekites. You need to take care of them. You need to pay them back. They have been the most awful enemy of God's people ever, and it is time for them to be destroyed. Pay them back. And God gave very specific instructions on how the payback was supposed to happen. And that was, destroy everything. All of it. Spare no one. Spare nothing. You know, in my pea brain, I have a hard time with that. I have a hard time reconciling that. Apparently so did King Saul, at least in his own way. Because Saul attacked the Amalekites, and he destroyed. But one of the things that he did is that he took the king of the Amalekites, Agag, he took him alive. He did the exact opposite of what God said. God said, destroy everything, spare nothing. And yet, King Saul took the opposition king alive. He took him captive. Well, he destroyed everyone else. But not only did he take Agag captive and keep him alive, Saul and his armies took all of the best of the cattle, all of the best of the sheep, for themselves. They kept everything that was good. They went through the Amalekite camp and saved a lot for themselves. Early the next morning, after the plunder had happened, Samuel meets with Saul. I don't know, check up, see how it went. Saul goes, "Hey, Samuel, I carried out God's wishes. I did what I was commanded to do." There's a great line. You know me. I kind of read between the lines, and I just hear sarcasm completely going on in this dialogue, because Samuel goes, "Saul, what's that I hear?" And in the distance, he's hearing the bleating of sheep and cows making noise and so forth. And Samuel goes, "You know, what do I hear?" And Saul has what I think would be a typical response that I would have gotten from my boys when they were teenagers. Maybe you would have gotten them too, is, yeah, that. And Samuel says to him, "So, Saul, why didn't you obey God?" It's one of the most penetrating questions in the entire Bible. You are commanded, leave nothing, spare no one. And yet you kept the king for yourself. You kept the best of the spoils for yourself. Saul says, but I did. I obeyed God. I destroyed everything except the best. I was going to make a sacrifice and offer them to God. Whoa. If you're a parent, hey, if you're a dad on Father's Day, man, have you heard that one before? After you've caught your kids in a bold-faced lie, and they're going, "But I was going to do this with it instead." Yeah, right. Okay? Well, maybe Saul was. Maybe that was his plan. We really don't know what the intent of his heart was. But he says, I was going to make a sacrifice to God out of the best of everything. Offer them to Him. Okay. Now, you can go read the story. There's a lot that I left out. Okay? But here was the message to me when I was younger. It came about as I began to understand this whole concept of Old Testament sacrificing, which was, for me, growing up in the church, kind of a creepy thing. I never really got it. It just didn't make any sense to me, although it made for great flannel graphs. It made for great stories in children's church, and it certainly meant for great skits done at church camp, when you could go back into the Old Testament and some of these weird things that they did, and you could reenact them. And that's about all I thought. But I began to learn some things. Bringing an offering to God, it was at the very core of the relationship that the Israelites had with their Creator God. To be able to offer back to Him. Part of it was wrapped up in a system that allowed people to, and these are my words, okay? It was a system that allowed people to square things away with God. In other words, to make things right when they got wronged. It was a way to be restored back to a right relationship with God after they had sinned, after they had disobeyed. It's actually, when you read through the Old Testament, it's actually a fairly complicated plan of making offerings and making sacrifices to God. Sometimes they would offer an animal, and it would be killed and placed on an altar and set on fire. Sometimes it could be a grain offering of some kind that was brought to the temple. Sometimes it would even be monetary, a way to make things right with God after there had been a lifestyle choice of some kind that separated them from God. And the act of sacrificing, this action that was taken on the part of a good heart, would be noticed by God in a pleasing way. And that person or even a group would be restored or made right with God. It's a wonderful system. Now I'll tell you this. It is natural. It is completely natural to grow up looking for approval from our parents. There is nothing wrong with that. As we grow up and get older, that desire for the approval of others gets transferred over to teachers and coaches and even friends sometimes, certainly mentors. I know for me, in my growing up years, the approval that I wanted more than anything else was from my dad. There's no doubt about that. After all of these years of being a son, raising sons, I still can't adequately explain the special bond that exists between a dad and a son, or a dad and a daughter. The father-child relationship, I think, is deeply embedded in the nature of God Himself. Okay? Don't always understand it. I just know that growing up, I wanted my dad to be happy with me. I wanted him, more than anything else, I wanted him to be delighted in my performance. Whatever it was, whether it was cleaning up the garage after I had already messed up the garage with his tools laying everywhere, whether it was out on the baseball field or the football field, I wanted him to be pleased with me in my early employment years, or as a college graduate, or as a young married guy and a dad myself. I really did. I always wanted him to be delighted with my behavior, with my performance. I always desired, and to a large degree received, a relationship with my dad. If I did something wrong, I worked extra hard to make things right with him. For some reason, it never bothered my mom very much. My mom spent a lot of time making excuses for me to my dad, which I will always be grateful for that. But with my dad, I worked hard. I worked hard, extra hard. And I guess at this point in my life, as I look back over all of that behavior, I can see where that kind of behavior can spill over into our interaction with God. I can see how that works some. And so that helps me understand at least a little bit about this Old Testament sacrificing thing. I wonder if in some ways the Israelites took this intricate, lovely system of sacrificing that God had created, and they made it into a way to prove to God that they were acceptable to Him. I know I did. It's kind of like this. No matter how bad you mess up, you can always go and build an altar and go and make a sacrifice to God, and it will all get better. It will all feel better. Sacrifices are what you do to make things right with God, right? Makes sense, doesn't it? But here's the deal. They got it wrong. They absolutely got it wrong. And Samuel calls him out right there on the spot. He calls King Saul out right there. It was never God's intent at all was that the sacrifice was to be offered to somehow sway God's opinion of us. Look at the end of the story. And I'm going to show it to you up here. This is a verse that has forever changed my life and my understanding of my interaction with God. It's 1 Samuel 15, verse 22. What is more pleasing to the Lord? Your burnt offerings and sacrifices, or your obedience to His voice? Listen, to obey is better than sacrifice, and submission is better than offering the fat of rams. What he said to Saul was, you know, if I were going to put it in modern vernacular, God don't care about your stinking sacrifices. He just wants you to obey Him. He just wants you to come at Him from your heart. He doesn't care about the fat of rams. He doesn't care about how cool your sacrifice is on the altar. He just wants something from in here that works its way out in your behavior. I think out of my early relationships, whether it was my dad or my coaches or my teachers or whomever I was with, I'm telling you right now, I grew up looking for God's approval. I grew up looking for it. I grew up trying to do things to make myself more acceptable to God. I had a symbolic sacrificial altar that I just carried around with me all of the time and spent many of my earlier years on my spiritual journey putting things on this altar to make myself feel better about myself, to relieve the guilt that I had for the choices that I had made, and hope that God was pleased with me because of this action of putting stuff on the altar. Maybe you've struggled with some of the same. I don't know. I hope this resonates with you at least on some level. Because I'll tell you, I turned the action of church attendance into a sacrifice on the altar of thinking that God was more pleased with me when I showed up for church than when I didn't. Now, trust me, that's a risky thing to say to this group. Okay? Okay, because we have actually thought about changing the sign. Instead of it saying North Point, it's going to say church where we don't take attendance. Okay? I mean, I realize what I'm saying when I poke fun at that, but I think you get what I'm saying, is that there's a huge difference between showing up on a Sunday because we think that if I show up on Sunday, God's going to be a little happier with me than if I go do something else on Sunday. There's some wrong motivation in there, because it's the difference between sacrifice and obedience. We are very clearly commanded to be part of the community of the church, and not just on a, you know, just not on something that where attendance is taken, but where we invest our lives in the body of Christ. There's no question about that. But when we reduce it to sacrifice, it misses the point. And it can be anything that we do. Had a bad week. I think, I'll drop a little more money in the offering box. You know, surely God will pay attention. Surely God will pay attention to that. We have a joke around here. I'm not calling anybody out, but you better be careful that you stop saying this out loud, because they're going to know who I'm talking about. But there's people, we joke about this, is like, hey, I've been like 3 weeks in a row. I mean, surely that's good for two off, right? Okay? And you know what? If you're not... Sorry, I'm not looking... I'm not looking at the person. Okay. You know who you are, though. And there are many of you. But it's like, it works its way into our way of thinking, because isn't that the way that the rest of the world functions? You know, it's, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, we'll pay back, I'll do a little extra, then I don't have to do as much. And somehow we've woven this into how God interacts with us and how we interact with Him. You know, I'm going to be a nice guy, I'm going to treat my wife well, I'll give some money to the poor. Don't murder, don't steal, don't lie. You know, checked all of that off. I went to the doctor. I can't tell all of this story, but I went to the doctor this last week, and he's looking at my chart, and we're trying to communicate clearly to our insurance company our displeasure in them. Okay, can you fill in the blanks? Trying to clearly communicate our displeasure. And so he's going, he's asking me some questions. He goes, well, do you do this? And have you done that? And I'll go, well, doctor, I've done some of that. And he goes, done that. He's just filling in this. And he turns around and looks at me, and he does this. He's about my age, a little younger. He turns around and looks at me, and he goes, 9 out of 10 commandments, I'm doing okay, aren't I? And I go, fine by me. Well, it was more of a joke. He is a wonderful, godly man. But he, and then we turned around, we had a discussion about how hard it is to live out a life of absolute obedience to God. And so he went in and changed some things back. But I thought it was really funny. But that's how we are. You know, we go, well, God, surely I'm okay with you. I got like 4 out of 7 this week. That ought to let me off for Sunday at least, shouldn't it? Read my Bible. Join a ministry. God. Hey, look, I even thought about being a missionary once. I mean, isn't that worth something? Look, God does not want our sacrifices. He flat out does not want sacrifices. He wants our obedience. He wants the same behaviors. He just wants them to come from a different part of who we are. He wants them to flow from a life of gratitude, not a life of fear. He doesn't want sacrifice, first of all, because they don't work. Sacrifices simply don't work. Guilt never does. It doesn't come from the heart. What it does is it maybe gives us a temporary buzz to feel better about ourselves. And to appease the God that we think we are trying to please. Not the holy Creator God of the universe. We offer back as a sacrifice to Him a little attendance, a little money, a little nice, a little service. Enough to relieve guilt and look good. But it never really changes us. It never really does what God has designed for it to do in us. 1 John chapter 4, verse 10. John writes it this way. This is real love. Not that we loved God, but that He loved us and sent His Son as a sacrifice to take away our sins. Jesus is the sacrifice. And He isn't just one of many. He isn't the big one in that we augment His sacrifice with all of our little sacrifices to make God really happy with us. That isn't how it works. The writer of Hebrews says it this way. It goes, "For God's will was for us to be made holy by the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once, for all time." For we who are followers of Christ, one sacrifice has made us right with God. There's not a whole bunch of little ones that we do continually again and again and again. It was done by Jesus on the cross on our behalf. The biggest truth of all, at least in my book, the sacrifice of Jesus that we read about in the New Testament, the sacrifice of the cross, cancels out the sacrifice of the altar. Can I say that again? I really would love for you to remember that line. The sacrifice of the cross cancels out the sacrifice of the altar. Jesus is the final, once and for all, sacrifice for sin. And you can't do anything to gain more of God's love, more of God's approval on your own, by your behavior. Because God is not like human dads. As hard as I try as a dad, I can't separate my own humanity from my own fatherhood sometimes. I can get my feelings hurt. I can get angry. I can say things that I regret. God, on the other hand, perfect. All the time. We are perfectly and completely and consistently loved by God because of what Christ did on the cross as the once and for all sacrifice for our sin. And we gain that. We gain that love and that acceptance when we come to Him by faith. That's why obedience is way better. Because sacrifice simply doesn't work. This may sound crass, but it's still worth saying. Jesus didn't die on the cross so that we could come and sit in a building once a week. Are you good with that? I want that to resonate. Now, sure hope I see you here next week. You see? Because there's something good about this, isn't there? Something good about being together. But He didn't die just so that you could go and sit once a week in a building. He died to give us life. And there's only one acceptable sacrifice that's big enough and good enough to do that for us. I'm going to end with this. The band can come up. I'm going to go back to the verse that we read early. And I want to remind you again of this simple lesson that takes a lifetime to live out and to understand. It's in Romans chapter 12. "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices." There are no dead sacrifices anymore. There's just lives that are offered, holy and pleasing to God. And this is your true and proper worship. We're going to share communion today and remember again that the death of Jesus on the cross was sufficient. It was good enough. You don't have to offer stuff anymore to try to make God love you any more than He already does. He proved it on the cross with Jesus.